If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Try to force it to him if he's open.
Here is Ovechkin. Shoots! He scores! He scores! Number 895!
History with 1.3 million people watching. Turner Sports' NHL coverage, the most ever for a non-Winter Classic game on Sunday afternoon. Eddie Olczyk was on the call with Kenny Albert, who you heard broadcasting the game there. And Eddie O joins us now on our Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Eddie, you're on in the nation's capital, where we are still celebrating Ovi. How are you?
I'm doing well, Granddaddy. Thank you for having me. And you mentioned on the call, when you played the call on our TNT broadcast, I did get the goosebumps again, to be honest with you. Like, it's to think about the number and to think about the theatrics of Alexander Ovechkin. Just amazing. I mean, to be there and to be on the call, to be in the building and the excitement level of every time. I mean, the crowd, they were watching the game, obviously. But when Ovi was not on the ice, it sure felt like the eyes were watching Ovi on the bench, waiting for him to come on the ice, because it seemed like every time he jumped on the ice in play, and I'm not talking about it a stoppage or coming off a stoppage, the pitch of the crowd. And look, there were a lot of Cap fans there the other day at UBS Arena in Elmont, New York, but it just was another level, and it was just so thrilled and honored and privileged to have been a small part of it on the broadcast. And we all saw hockey history, and it's just amazing, because I played for 16 years from 1984 to 2000, and I saw Wayne Gretzky do what he did. And seeing that number get put up when he did retire in 1999, it was like, yeah, that's one that Gretz is going to have, because he's going to have a million records. And this one, I don't think it's ever going to get broken. And sure enough, the grade eight is able to take it down, and that just speaks to the greatness, the consistency, the health. He's evolved as a player. He's changed as a player, I think, which has helped him the last, 5 to 7 years. So long-winded. It was awesome, and congratulations to the grade eight.
Can you go into that about his evolution? That's what's been so remarkable to us. I mean, he was hitting everything that moved early in his career,
yeah,
and now just
exactly.
he's like a shark that's on break, kind of a lot of times,
yeah,
just sort of conservative energy, but finding himself into good spots.
Yeah, I think that to me, and I said this a couple of times over, I want to say the last handful of years, but seemed to get a lot more traction here when all of a sudden, he's approaching 850, 860, 870, and people are wondering, well, how has he done it? I mean, look at unfairly is, I think, some people and some hockey analysts have talked about him being one-dimensional. just a goal scorer. He's the farthest from being a one-dimensional hockey player. Like, I mean, he does way more than just score goals. A, schematically, he opens up ice, and he always has, and you got to account for him. So there's something for that. He sees the ice. He's a very good passer. You know, he forechecks extremely well. And then you add in the physical confrontation that he has the ability. You know, for the first probably, honestly, 14-plus years, he was willing to run somebody in the third or fourth row and maybe even the eighth or ninth row. Like, he would pick his spots and he wouldn't bypass anybody. But I think what has happened is that he's learned. He's gotten older. He's learned. He's understood that, like, that takes a piece out of you, and you don't have maybe as much energy to play on the offensive side. And I think that that's what's happened here the last 5-plus years, is that he realized that I'm going to be much more selective. He's still going to, you still got to have your head up, because he might think about running you into the third or fourth row. But what it's done, it's kept him healthier. I think it's given him more energy within games to be able to bypass those hits and be much more selective. And then obviously working on his craft, which, you know what, nobody's done it better. And he has been able to achieve a marker, like we said earlier, that I think most people, I should say, well, I'll speak for myself, that I didn't think was ever, was ever attainable. Now, look, the game has changed. All sports have catered to the offensive side. Maybe a little bit too much in a lot of sports, but that's probably for another day. But the way that the rules are now, the overtime rules, the power plays, just the way that the game is played now, the timing couldn't have been any better. So I tip my hockey helmet to him for being able to change his game in a most positive way. And look, 40-plus goal seasons, never been done in the history of the National Hockey League. That's just stuff that is, what do today's kids say? Sick. Yeah. That's sick. Like, that is just, it's just great stuff. And, an unbelievable day for hockey on Sunday between the Caps and Islanders.
Yeah, it was great. And the coverage was awesome. I got to go back, 'cause we were watching at a watch party, our local Monumental crew, and watch your guys call in the broadcast that you guys did, and having Gretzky, and it was just really well done by everybody nationally, and you guys having the Ovechkin down the stretch there. Very, very exciting times for Caps fans. Eddie Olczyk is with us on Grant and Danny. I'm curious, as we go back in time, as to like his evolution. Also, the conversation around him, right? There was a time where early in his career, he was rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. The old guard, a lot of the, particularly the Canadian analysts, our perception was, in fact, we have a bit here that we do, Pierre Maguire on NBC, hey, Edzo, Sidney Crosby just breathed. I don't believe it, Edzo.
He's exhaling, Edzo. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my God, he just skated through the neutral zone. My pants need to come off, Edzo.
He's got a glove on each hand, Edzo.
Ovechkin's got 4 goals, but Crosby's skating with both feet, Edzo. But anyway, early in his career, shtick aside, like, he could do nothing right with a lot of these people. Did you ever notice? I mean, you're an American analyst, and maybe it's not quite the same as the a lot of the Canadian folks, but like,
yeah,
it seemed to go away. Why was that? Or is that not fair?
Well, I mean, look, that's very funny, because I lived it every day, so I would just laugh like I am right now, maybe not outwardly over the air when that was happening. But look, I just full disclosure for some people that may not know. I was coaching in Pittsburgh for the Pittsburgh Penguins back in 2003. And that year we were in a major rebuild in Pittsburgh, and we had just drafted Marc-Andre Fleury, and we knew obviously what was coming. We knew the Grade 8 was coming that next draft year. We knew Evgeny Malkin was coming that next draft year. And oh, by the way, Sidney Crosby was coming the following season. So I was privy to meetings and scouting reports in Pittsburgh, and knowing that, look, we were going to hit the jackpot either way, whether we finished first or second. And I think at that time there was a question mark on who would be the first pick if we would have gotten it. We didn't have any centers because I think you got to build. I think you got to build your franchise through the middle of the ice, and we kind of agreed on that. So I just kind of giving you guys the tea leaves a little bit. But everybody said is that at that time, and I'm going back to 04 if I can remember my dates. He like this guy, meaning the grade eight Alexander Ovechkin, is that he has the ability to be a generational player that could play with that power and that ability to change a game, whether the puck is on his stick or he's putting a shoulder in somebody's chest. And that, and it took a while for him and the Caps to win, but I don't think that they did not win because of Alexander Ovechkin. I think that all of a sudden it was better players, timing's everything, you know, and the grade eight is able to do that. So I think with the swagger and with the confidence and the way that he played the game, I think that maybe, not me, but I think it might have taken people back a little bit in the confidence level that he had. And look at the battle between him and Sidney Crosby was awesome. It was awesome for the game. It's awesome for the history of the game. And you look at those two players now, and I know they were drafted in different years, but they came in together, is that I think that they've helped carry the league on their shoulders with the battles between the Penguins and the Caps, and then also the individual battles between Ovi and Sid. And I don't know why, you know, why maybe the extra scrutiny on Ovi, but I do know is that the greatness of him came to the forefront, obviously, when the Caps won the Stanley Cup, and then now when you see what has taken place here to get to the top of the mountain to become the greatest goal scorer in the history of the National Hockey League is just absolutely amazing. So I know there's a lot there, but I just wanted to kind of put it into context there. From a former player, mm-hmm. and then somebody that was on the other side and then coaching against him, and then now obviously all these years of being a broadcaster, whether at NBC or now at TNT, to be able to see and know the insights of what was projected by, you know, supposedly the hockey know-it-alls on the inside of scouting, is that like forget the numbers. Okay. Like I know it's hard too, but just forget the numbers. Exactly how we thought Ovi could be, he has surpassed that because he does have the ability to be a game changer offensively and physically, which ultimately ends up, you know, deciding on winning and losing in hockey. And he's had an unbelievable career, without a doubt.
So, Eddie, you touched on this briefly, but I'd love for you to go into it. I don't know if it's Magic and Bird, right, what they did for the NBA, but this Crosby-Ovechkin thing,
sure.
It's something. So quantify that for us. Maybe just sort of look back. How different is the game now than when he broke in 20 years ago?
Well, I mean, the rules are different. You know, I mean, it is a different type of game. I think it is a little bit more wide open now than it was when they first initially came into the league, both Sid and Ovi. But I think that what they've proven, I mean, look at where they are. I mean, individually on their particular teams. Like I said about Ovi, I mean, he's, I think, third in the league in scoring now. You know, as I said, he's a 14th, 40-plus goal season. You know where he is on the goal-scoring all-time list now. And you look at what Sidney Crosby's been able to do. I mean, I thought last year was as good as a year that Crosby's had in the last 3 or 4 years. Like, I thought he was a finalist for a Selke trophy for the best two-way forward in the entire National Hockey League last year. And he's playing on a team that, you know, they're still hanging on, but, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs again. So I just think when you look at these two players and the longevity and the winning, not only internationally, but in the National Hockey League, it's been an unbelievable run because it does go like that. It's in all sports. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, what era is that, you know, you're going to have those two, three, maybe lucky enough, you know, I mean, I grew up in Chicago. I was drafted in 1984. I was a third overall pick for the Chicago Blackhawks. They had another pretty good third overall pick in 1984 that is the greatest basketball player ever to play. And, you know, I mean, like, you have those eras now. I mean, obviously, you know, Michael is, you know, I mean, carried it for a very, very long time and probably still does to a certain extent. But all sports go through it. And when you have these elite athletes that just breathe different air, it's great for the game. It's great for business. And, you know, the National Hockey League is just so fortunate that, you know, both Sid and Ovi came in at the same time and have won and have set records and continue to be important pieces of the National Hockey League. So now who are going to be, you know, those next guys, right? Now, obviously, McDavid is there and McKinnon's there. We know what happened at the Four Nations Faceoff. We have the Olympics coming up in, you know, in February of next year. So that'll be a big lift. And it's been great. I mean, and neither one is disappointed. And that to me comes with a lot of pressure from within, but also, you know, in the National Hockey League in North America. And, oh, by the way, it stretches because of Alexander Ovechkin. You talk about worldwide, and these guys have carried the torch just beautifully.
Well said. 1.3 mil tuned in to Eddie Olczyk's broadcast with Kenny Albert on Turner. Hopefully they'll be calling a lot of Caps playoff wins deep into the summer. Hey, before we let you go, you're big into horse racing, yes? I feel like I've seen you for years do horse racing stuff.
This will be my 11th year doing the Kentucky Derby for,
right?
NBC.
Oh, that's
so, yes,
cool.
Yeah.
I become a veteran.
So I thought I had seen you for years. I just didn't know. Do you keep up with it year round? Because the reason I ask is a buddy of ours, Jason Wirth, the former Nationals player.
Yes.
So he obviously, you know, hit the lottery and his horse got into the Derby last year. Well, he's got another horse this year that just finished second in the Jeff Ruby Stakes. Flying Mohawk, which is supposed to make the field again this year.
Yeah, just for people that may not, Turfway Park, where the Jeff Ruby Stakes was in Kentucky, that's a different type of surface. That's like an all-purpose surface. I mean, I don't want to say it's like AstroTurf, you know, as far as in a sand form, but it is kind of like that. It's not a regular dirt track like Churchill Downs. So I think the jury is still out for for that particular horse. But Kentucky Derby, I'll be there for NBC. And right now, I'll just let you know, if the Kentucky Derby was in 20 minutes from right now, I would be betting a horse by the name of Journalism that is based out in California and just win the Santa Anita Derby on the weekend. So hopefully get at least 4-1 and turn $100 into 500. So hopefully we can get those odds come the first Saturday in May.
All right, I like it. We might have to have you back on in a month or so to discuss it. But hey, great call. We enjoyed the broadcast. Wanted to get you guys on just to give a little national perspective on Ovi. Thanks so much for the time, Eddie.
I look forward to talking to you guys again. I appreciate it. And again, congratulations. And if I can, really quick, I thought the National Hockey League did an unbelievable job with the ceremony. And I've used the saying before in 2010 at the Olympics on NBC when Team USA was playing Team Canada. I thought the event on Sunday was tremendously tremendous. So a tip of the hockey helmet to the National Hockey League, and a job well done. And the fans were unbelievable at UBS Arena as well. So we'll look forward to chatting with you guys down the road. Thanks.
Sounds good. Yeah. Cheers. Thank you.
Our pleasure. There's Eddie Olczyk. Check him out. Turner Sports, as they continue to broadcast the Caps deep into the playoffs, hopefully, if they can go on a run. Speaking of the Caps, their owner, Ted Leonsis, was on the show yesterday, and he made it very clear he still wants to buy the Washington Nationals. I found it really interesting how people responded to that when I had posted a quote from Leonsis about wanting to buy the Nats on social media. Let's get into that next on The Fan. On yesterday's show, owner Ted Leonsis gave us nearly 30 minutes after Alex Ovechkin's record. And before we said goodbye, the idea of him buying the Nationals came up. Remember, Leonsis tried to buy the Nationals. The Lerners didn't agree to a price. That was a couple of years ago. And so we wanted to know, is he still interested? And he made no bones about it. He absolutely would still like to buy the baseball team. Of course, he owns the Caps. He owns the Wiz, the Mystics. and several other entities in town, the CEO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment. This is what Leontis said on Grant and Danny yesterday about buying the Nationals.
Yeah, I'm forever interested. The season started, and that should be a signal that the Lerner family is very committed and the team's really not for sale. And I think where the Lerner family is, and we haven't had active conversations, is they're rebuilding the team. They're excited about the team. The new season has started. They don't want any rumors, any hoopla about corporate developments. They want to focus on the team, and I totally understand that and respect that. Mark Lerner came to the game when Alex scored 2 goals, met Wayne Gretzky. I mean, we're close friends. I love the family. I'm going to be here. We'll keep the lights on, but there's nothing active going on. And, you know, I'm going to go out and buy season tickets for the Nationals. It's hard to go to games, you know, when Caps are still in season, Wizards are still in season. But I look forward to going and checking out the team. And, you know, I enjoy going to baseball games. So I'm interested, but it doesn't seem right now that they're that interested. And I totally understand why.
It's a great answer. That
absolutely,
is
yeah.
Newsy that made the rounds yesterday and is certainly something that I'd say ends any speculation that Leontis wouldn't want to buy the team at this point. The cliff notes of that 1 minute answer, forever interested. His interest is not waning. They're not going to be talking about selling the team with him in season. So no reason really at this point to consider it, but he said, I'll be here. You know, we'll leave the lights on, meaning call me when you're ready.
The instant you're ready to sell, I'll be forever interested. That's a pretty big tell.
Forever interested. Yeah. I'll be here whenever you need me. You just call. I want to buy the team. They don't want to sell it to me right now. Was kind of the last sentence there, paraphrasing. He's interested, they're not as interested. But I posted those quotes, you know, what he just said, what you just heard. I tweeted them out yesterday, and I was pretty shocked by the response. What I mean by that is to say there were several people, I would say half of the people, whose response was something along the lines of, oh, I wouldn't want Ted to buy the Nationals. Which I don't understand at all, to be honest with you. Now, if the argument is just you don't want one owner to own all your teams, I do get that. Because as we've seen with Leontis as the owner of the Capitals and the Wizards, it can be really hard at any given moment, especially when the seasons conflict, to feel like, I know Wizards fans have long felt like they get the shaft or whatever, like, you know, it's on, everything is, everybody's getting 100%. Whether that's perception or reality, I understand that that is a fear that fans have.
Right.
And just generally speaking, when one person in town owns everything, it's a, you know, like any monopoly of sorts. I mean, there are drawbacks to that. So if your fear is just the amount of things he'd own, I guess I could, well, not my priority or something I care about, I could reckon that. But the current situation with the Nationals very, very clearly is that there is no other suitor at this moment. There's nobody else publicly saying they want to buy it. The last time that they were on the market, by all accounts, the only person that was particularly interested in buying them was Ted Leontis. So to me, as of right now, it's a, would you rather the Lerners continue to own this thing in perpetuity or Leontis swoop in and buy this thing? And to me, that's the biggest no-brainer ever. Twofold. One, I desperately want a real television product so badly. That's not to knock Bob and Franny, who do a good job in game, but I want pregame and postgame. See what they do for the Capitals and the Wizards. They do real-life sports programming.
Mm-hmm.
They have shoulder programs. They have content all day long. I want that badly for my baseball team, and I think it's absurd that we don't have it.
Agreed.
The path to that, very clearly, is Ted buying the team very easily. Because he made the case on our show again yesterday that he has no interest in buying the TV rights if he doesn't own the team, which he basically says there's not money in it at this point. I'll take his word for it. Yeah. I don't know how the business part of that works. I'll bet he does. But how many off seasons do you want to sit and watch them spend no money and do nothing as an organization? I would love to just try something else. That's the other part of this, baseball-wise. Not just the TV part of it with Masson being gone, but Leontis' Capitals resume is pretty fantastic. Now, the Wizards' resume clearly is not, But I don't know, Danny. If it's really a two-horse race, which is how I view it,
yeah.
Lerner's keep owning this thing for a long time. Ted Leonsis takes over. I badly want Ted Leonsis to take over.
If that's the frame or the framing, then you're right. It's a no-brainer. In other words, you're counting on, if you're Team Lerner, for the sake of argument, just to set this conflict up, if you're Team Lerner, then you're saying at some point it's going to change, not based on the last 5 years, not based on any statistical evidence, just based on what it was at one point, a.k.a. not a ridiculous spend, but a very competitive spend for the Nationals. Right, there may have been times where there was some nickel diming, but that's pro sports. No fan base thinks their ownership group is perfect. There's always going to be gripes in every sport, no matter what. But the Nationals had a competitive payroll. Their payroll now is, it doesn't look as bad as it actually is because they're still paying Steven Strasburg. Yeah, still counts.
The payroll of the players that play is near the bottom of baseball.
It's Marlins-y. It's
ridiculous. It's
down at the
bottom. Pirates-y. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, and the idea, if you say, well, I'd rather have the Lerners do it, is you're assuming or hoping, based on what I don't know, that it'll go back to what it was at some point. Maybe when all the money goes into their account from the back pay from Masson, or maybe something changes. I don't know what it would be, but maybe then they'll go and do what they wanted, what they're supposed to be doing. That's the argument. Other than that, I can't figure it out.
There is nothing that has happened over the last several years that would make you think that is the case. This offseason was the tell. Like, I had been very patient and just kind of like, hey, well, I don't know what I don't know. It's a rebuild. There's no real reason to spend. You know, maybe they'll flip the switch. This was the flip the switch offseason. You don't get to just keep, well, maybe in a year. Of course, it's so easy for you to keep me waiting when every offseason you can go, well, there's always next offseason. There's always another one where you might spend. But what they did this offseason, $9 million for Mike Soroka as a starting pitcher that most teams viewed as a reliever, and Nathaniel Lowe at first base, who you had to trade a reliever to go get to inherit a contract while the Rangers were trying to downsize financially at first base. So your baseball ops people found a good deal. That was the offseason. You didn't spend money on your bullpen. You didn't upgrade in other areas. You did nothing to generate excitement. Like, we're a week into the season. Is there excitement about the Nats? I love the Nats. I'm over there all the time. I was there last night. I'll be there tomorrow. I've been at 5 games already. There's Dodgers fans and 7,000 of us over there last night in the cold. People just aren't that excited about it.
They're not.
You didn't give them a reason to be excited. But that's the part I don't get is, oh, well, I hope he doesn't buy the Nats. Are you a Nats fan? For what reason? We also talk about the fact that they have not paid or kept any of their own. Guess what? Alex Ovechkin, 20 seasons with the Washington Capitals, a 13-year record contract, a 5-year contract on the back end of that at the end of his career. Nicholas Backstrom, a 10-year contract. TJ Oshie, a massive 8-year contract. They have paid their own. John Carlson, 8 years, $64 million, was one of the biggest contracts for defensemen, if not the biggest at that time. They have taken care of their guys. They have set the market. You know, Leonsis talked yesterday about the commitment they like making to their players. That's been one of the big bugaboos. Is it perfect? I'm not trying to sell you that this is the greatest situation in the world. If some Jeff Bezos-like billionaire was going to outspend Steve Cohen, is waiting in the wings to come buy this thing, then I want them too. I want the guy that's going to have the $600 million payroll and compete with the Dodgers for Shohei and the Mets for Soto. Yeah, let's do that. But that guy ain't walking through the door. That's not realistic.
It doesn't seem to be.
There's no one that wants to buy this team right now, basically other than Rubenstein, who's already got his team, the Orioles, and he's checked out, and now Ted Leonsis.
And again, if that's the realistic scenario, which is all we know so far, is one person has declared, again, on our show and with the previous offer, that he has tried to buy them and would buy them if he was allowed to make an offer on them. If that's the choice, it's a binary, it's pretty easy to me. And, you know, I'm not the world's biggest Ted Leonsis cheerleader when it comes to his ownership. I think criticisms of him with the Wizards over years are justified. I just don't think he understood the sport. If he would have read his own ownership manifesto about how to build a winner, he would have done things a lot differently. But that's a small gripe. It's all relative here. You're talking about an engaged owner that at least has a philosophy and a plan versus whatever this is for the Nationals. To me, it's obvious. Like, I'm still hoping for the White Knight. I'm hoping for someone to come riding in and my Steve Cohen, but I don't know where that guy is.
Totally.
If he's out there, hear my voice, I'm available.
If it is moving forward with the learners and taking your chances that they spend again at some point, or Leonce is buying this thing, it just feels like such a no-brainer. But I want to get thoughts from you guys on this at 800-636-1067. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Ted Leonsis on the show yesterday said he's forever interested in buying the Nationals. Said he's interested, and right now the learners are not in season. Posted that quote and got feedback from a lot of people saying they didn't want Ted to buy the Nationals. Now, if you're comparing Leonsis, who would be owning three of the four major teams in town, to, say, a Steve Cohen-like figure who's also vying for them, maybe because you just don't want one owner owning everything, that would make sense to me. But right now, it's the learners continuing to own it, or possibly they get to a point where they work out a deal with Leonsis. And to me, that just seems like easily the best-case scenario here of the two. But we're bouncing that off you guys at 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny.
Yeah, I mean, if it's as presented, right? Here's the choice. One person we know, again, he told us again yesterday, reaffirmed it. We know that there's been an offer in the past. He literally said, I'm forever interested. No one else has said that, right?
The market is one buyer for your house.
Uh-huh.
That's where we're at on this. There's one person that's come through. There's one person that's made you an offer. So either you keep living there or they buy your house. Which one do you like better? I'd like them to buy the house. Joanne is in Virginia on Grant and Danny. I believe she's on her way to Nationals Park tonight. It's going to be cold, Joanne. Wear your coat.
I have one and a blanket.
You'll need it.
Yeah, you'll need all of it.
It's going to be chilly, but let's get a win and a series victory over the Dodgers.
That'd be great. Listen, to this point of Ted Leonsis, I've been a longtime season plan holder, and I honestly, personally, do not know anything about the business of owning a sports team. However, the consensus of a lot of the season ticket holders that I've spoken to are not happy with the fact that Ted Leonsis wants to buy the team. And I think their concern has nothing to do with he owns this, he owns that. Their concern is that he's kind of let the Wizards go by the wayside and be, you know, the stepchild in the Cinderella story. But they're afraid he's not going to invest. They're afraid he's just going to own it and then do nothing with it. Now, granted, right now, nobody's doing anything with anything. But I think that's the consensus and the reason why they don't want him to buy it.
So, but I'm going to ask you again, though. Would you rather the learners continue to own it, or would you rather him buy it?
Personally, if the learners would have to show me that they're taking this team seriously again and invest a lot of money. Otherwise, no. I would prefer to have an owner who really cares about the team and wants to do something, like you said, pre and post game on Monumental. Now, with that said, Monumental doesn't always work. I mean, even somebody on your show the other day said, oh, I had to watch Obi's two goals because Monumental wasn't working for me, so I had to go to TNT.
Well, that was Ryan, and that was Ryan's issue.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody else was having that issue. I never have any problems with my stream, I'll say that.
There was a signal issue when we were at Caddy's a little bit. Yeah.
That is true.
So, hiccup, who knows? Yeah. I don't know if that's a monumental thing, a cable thing, it's above my pay. I don't know if it's DirecTV or something. I'm not trying to impute anybody, but just saying. Yeah, I don't know if that's generally has a reputation for not working all the time.
Not really sure.
Yeah, but to me, the big picture point is right. Like, we, here in this marketplace, baseball fans don't know what it's supposed to look like unless you've seen other markets. Like, if you lived in New York, Boston, Chicago, Philadelphia, Detroit, name your baseball city, you would be stunned at the level of programming, the level of access, the level of information, the level of get to know, the level of analysis.
Yes.
That's beyond, like, you know, a cursory sort of a glimpse at what may have happened in an on-field interview.
It's like, my number one reason why I want it. They do things the right way with how they cover their teams and invest in their teams and televise around games, and they would do that with baseball. And as a consumer, I want that badly. Number two, though, I know that the Wizards have not been good, and I also come at this from the perspective, while I care about the Wizards, I obviously care about the Capitals more. Like, I am a bigger Capitals fan than I am a Wizards fan. But I think it's a little bit overstated the way that we and maybe it's overstated how much credit we give Ted for hockey. Like, I think he's a phenomenal hockey owner. You could convince me, hey, take a little bit away from your 9.5 out of 10 you're giving him as a hockey owner, because they had Ovi for 20 years. But then you've got to give me more on the Wizards ownership, where I think it's overstated a little bit how he doesn't care, he's not a basketball fan, or he hasn't invested. Everybody wanted him to give John Wall a bunch of money, and he did. Everybody wanted to give Bradley Beal a bunch of money, other than me and four people, and he did. And then he gave him more and more and more and more. Were there mistakes? Yes. Did they run a great program? But it's not like they haven't brought in Flip Saunders when he was a highly regarded coach and pay him a bunch of money, or Scott Brooks when he was a highly regarded, sought-after coach and pay him a bunch of money. Has he had more success with the Capitals? Obviously, no doubt. Did he do some ridiculous things like keeping Ernie Grunfeld around forever that people like you can't get past and won't? And I'm not joning, I'm just saying.
Totally correct, yeah.
We'll never be able to like forgive him for? Sure, it's not perfect. But this idea that he's been like an F owner for the Wizards, I just don't agree with that.
That's interesting, because that's how I would view it. I mean,
you think he's been an F?
Yeah, I think he
paid two guys supermax contracts that were really good players.
Yeah, I mean, so he, you know, you could pick
that, that's ownership. That's commitment to your superstars.
You could pick a couple single instances over the years. He had a fundamental philosophical lack of understanding about what the NBA is, was, where the puck was going, so to speak, and sort of always seemed like, well, the most important thing is just to make the postseason. I mean, you heard the mantra over the years when GM became the new GM. That's all they cared about, was that play-in game or that one more home game, and it was the wrong way to do it forever. And if he hadn't demonstrated the knowledge and aptitude to do the thing in hockey that he prescribed, which was, if you're not good, admit that you're not good and tear the thing down. That's how he got Ovechkin the first time.
Right.
And he wouldn't do that until over the last couple of years. They refused to be bad on purpose.
Yeah, the problem was, though, I don't know that you could have done that around Wall and Beal. Like, with those two guys, they're elevators to the point where you can't be what they... To tank now, they're benching Alex Saar in the fourth quarter of games, who's not even that good yet, to make sure that they lose to the Brooklyn Nets so Drew Timmy can get the game winner. When you've got Wall and Beal for that iteration, that era of Wizards basketball, to tear it down to the studs wouldn't have necessarily worked.
No, then multiple years without Wall, and you had Beal, and you're limping along winning 30 games and giving him maxes and maxes and everything else.
You're preaching to the choir, but that's not what Wizards fans wanted to do until the very end, the vast majority of them. But again, we can disagree on his philosophy was wrong. When I'm talking about ownership, I'm talking about commitment, opt-in. Like, there were not long periods of time, in my opinion, where they were not spending on the executive or coaching or player level. There was always some opt-in there. Currently, they're horrendous, and it's brilliant, but they went and got Winger, who's a star.
They finally went and got some rock stars.
A star, and they're doing it. Like, this is the thing that I always wanted them to do in this moment. But, like, Scott Brooks got a ton of money, if you remember.
Yep.
There were times along the way where they had bad coaches, too. Who was it? Randy
Whitman.
Whitman, who stunk. But like the Orioles, as an example, had Dave Tremblay manage them when they were losing 100 games. You should. Right now they got Brian Keefe. A real grown-up doesn't want to come in here and coach Justin Champagne to a ninth straight loss. You see what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
It's time and place a little bit, too. Let's go to Jason in Woodbridge. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I would take Leosis over the learners. I think the dad learner was all in, and I don't think the kids care at all. I think they just happen to own the team, and I wish come back to the other side. But I think Leosis would, at least in the beginning, would try. I don't know. I do agree with you, Grant, that he did try to do stuff with the Wizards. I mean, Wall getting hurt, that was a murder. I mean, that just killed our team, and Beal.
Jason, and sorry to cut you off, but Danny's right too. Like, his philosophy, which works in hockey, which by the way I think would work really well in baseball, it does not work in basketball. Is unique.
Mm-hmm.
You either have the LeBron of your conference or you don't get to the conference finals. And your point is you got to keep tearing it down until you get those guys.
Yeah, and you can't
just easier said than done.
Can't keep trading away your first round pick year after year to year to Phoenix to try to win one more game to get a Marcin Gortat or a Trevor Ariza or whatever.
They got to within, you know, they got to the conference final essentially once. They were in game seven and they got Kelly Olynyk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his point was, like it is in hockey, just keep having bites at the apple and you'll break through. And I mean, they almost did essentially.
Very close right there, yeah.
But yes, you're right. I agree. In basketball, it doesn't work that way. Jonathan Rockville, you're up.
Yeah, Grant, I agree with you 100%. I can't understand why anybody would not want Leonsis to own the Nets, especially in view of what the Lerners have done the last few years here. He's been a great owner for the Caps. He spends to the limit and then past that. I mean, bear in mind all the money he's got on the books for Backe and Oshie this year. So he spent well above the cap. And he'd think he'd be a great owner for the Nets. You can't, the NBA, that's not a real league. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, I was a fan of the Bullets, but, you know, it's now there's a salary cap, but there's not a salary cap, and you resign your own guy, and you can go play with it. I don't really take that league seriously. I mean, as you've pointed out, yeah, you're limited. If you get a great player, you know, you can run with it, and if you don't, it takes forever to rebuild. So I don't hold that against him. I think he'd be a terrific owner.
I do think in the NBA, they just haves and have-nots, and if you're not in the club, it's harder to get there. Like, when they were close, all you need is the meeting with Kevin Durant that you can't get. Yep. You know, all you need. Mm-hmm. So, like, I just think it is harder as an owner to do it, like, with a good process, a good culture. But that's funny. It's not a – what did he call it?
It's not a real league at this point.
Not a real league. I mean, I don't know that I agree with that. But to me, it's just the current operation, the status quo.
For the Nats, is unacceptable.
The status quo is not okay,
mm-hmm.
Period. That's where I'm at on that. And for the record, we had a caller saying, oh, the Lerners don't want to be. Mark Lerner loves it. Mark Lerner's like all in. This guy's at games. He's sitting there in the cold. He's sitting there knee-to-knee with Rizzo on draft night. He loves it. I just don't know if the whole family is in. That seems like the issue. G&D on the Fan will get you ready for Nats baseball. Hit the headlines before we say goodbye.